Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. The chairs of several key House committees are expected to announce articles of impeachment in about 2 hours. NPR's Claudia Grisales reports House Judiciary Committee staffers are meeting this morning ahead of the announcement.
Democratic sources tell NPR that Judiciary Committee staff will have one final meeting before the Tuesday morning announcement. The chairs of the House committees leading the impeachment inquiry will meet first and then are expected to announce the articles of impeachment at a 9 a.m. press conference. The plans come after the Judiciary Committee held a day-long hearing reviewing the findings in the impeachment probe over the last several weeks. The panel could vote on the articles later this week, and that would be followed by a historic vote as early as next week. Claudia Grisales, NPR News, Washington.
Congressional negotiators have reached agreement on a massive $738 billion annual defense bill. NPR's Giles Snyder reports it also includes 12 weeks of paid family leave for all civilian employees of the federal government.
The family leave provision for the federal workforce represents a victory for Democrats. It was included in the final legislation alongside President Trump's desire to create a Space Force. Under the bill, the Space Force would be housed under the Air Force. Leaders of the House and Senate Armed Services Committees announced the compromise legislation that also includes a 3.1% pay raise for the troops.
NPR's Giles Snyder. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is expected to visit President Trump at the White House today. The agenda hasn't been released, but NPR has learned the leaders are expected to discuss the Russian-U.S. relationship. The leaders of Russia, Ukraine, France, and Germany are reporting some progress in their discussions on the war in eastern Ukraine. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports the leaders' talks in Paris broke up late in the night.
Presidents Vladimir Putin and Volodymyr Zelensky, with the leaders of France and Germany mediating, agreed to a ceasefire and prisoner exchange before the end of the year, plus a withdrawal of forces from three conflict zones and another meeting of the crisis group in 4 months. A clearly nervous Zelensky, speaking through a French interpreter, called the meeting long but concrete and a positive first step. It was his first meeting with Putin.
Mesdames et messieurs, chers journalistes,
as he spoke, Zelensky exchanged several looks with President Emmanuel Macron, who seemed to encourage him. It's the first time the crisis group over Ukraine has met in 4 years. More than 13,000 people have died in the conflict between Ukrainian forces and Russian-backed separatists. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris.
Authorities in New Zealand say a sixth person has died of injuries from a volcano on White Island, just off the country's North Island. 8 people are missing, and officials believe they perished when the volcano suddenly erupted this week. As many as 30 people may be injured. You're listening to NPR.
This is 90.9 WBUR. Good morning. I'm Bob Oakes in Boston. The race for the final Boston City Council at-large seat has come down to just one vote. The recount that ended last night found education advocate Julia Mejia with one vote more than immigration rights supporter Alejandra St. Guillen. WBUR's Simone Rios tells us the recount focused on two contested ballots.
And by the end of the recount, which took 3 days, they were literally tied, 22,491 votes each. And then these two remaining contested ballots came into play. Only one of them was counted. It went for Mejia. Alejandra St. Guillen is planning to consider whether she wants to begin litigation.
And St. Guillen is expected to decide today if she'll go to court. A report critical of the MBTA finds the T is not doing enough to ensure safety on the system. The independent report was commissioned following this summer's Red Line derailment that caused delays along the Braintree branch for months. More from WBUR's Steve Brown.
The report concludes the T's approach to safety is questionable, which results in safety culture concerns. It found deficiencies in policies, application of safety standards, and accountability. Report co-author Carmen Bianco, who used to head the New York City transit system, says several items need to be addressed.
We found that the preventative maintenance needs to be increased, be improved, but we also found an inadequate headcount. So there's simply just not enough people working in the maintenance areas to do that work.
A panel of transit experts behind the report has made 34 recommendations to help the T improve safety, including hiring more employees to work on the system. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Steve Brown.
State Environmental Police say they found the New Bedford-based scallop boat, the Leonardo, that went missing off Martha's Vineyard. They say the Leonardo sank and is in about 140 feet of water. Only one member of the four-person crew was rescued. The other three are missing at sea. Another parent has agreed to plead guilty in Boston federal court in the ongoing nationwide college admissions bribery scandal. 47-year-old Karen Littlefair of California admits to paying $9,000 to have someone else take her son's online classes. 20 parents have so far pleaded guilty in the scandal. More than a dozen others are still fighting charges. Sports: Kemba Walker scored 22 points for the Celtics last night in their 110-88 win over the Cleveland Cavaliers at the Garden. Celts visit the Indiana Pacers tomorrow. The Bruins have now lost three in a row, with last night's 5-2 loss to the Senators in Ottawa. The Bruins travel to Washington tomorrow to play the Caps. And the forecast: warm during the day today, then some snow tonight. It'll be around 60 today. Wet today with showers and rain. But late tonight, the temperatures plummet and it changes to freezing rain and snow. Snow ends tomorrow morning after 1 to 4 inches fall. It'll be in the 30s tomorrow. Sunny skies Thursday and Friday, and in the 30s both days. A mild 56 degrees in Boston now, 50 in Worcester, 56 in Salem, and 55 in New Bedford at 7:08.
WBUR supporters include Massport. Boston Logan is paving the way to a better travel experience with a centralized Lyft and Uber area. During the busy holiday season, be sure to build in extra travel time. It's all part of the Logan Forward commitment to build a better airport. Learn more at loganforward.com. And iDrive, maker of Remote PC, providing real-time remote access to computers anywhere and featuring Remote PC Vision, an augmented reality support tool. Learn more at remotepc.com.
This is 90.9 WBUR. Bob Oakes here with Robin Young from Here Now. Good morning, Robin.
It has been, actually.
That's
fantastic.
Right. It has been. And Jay Clayton is here, too. Good morning to you, Jay.
Good morning.
It's been a great morning because we came pretty close, just a few pledges shy of raising $5,000 in the half hour between 6:30 and 7 o'clock, $5,000 for the WBUR year-end fundraiser. Thank you to everyone who gave. But we're in another hour now, so we've set a new goal, $15,000. To raise this hour. And why? Because we're trying to raise just the amount of money it takes to keep things going for you in 2020 and also pay some of the accumulated bills from 2019. It's all about making sure that we're a strong, independent, vital news source, what we've been for you for years now and what we will be in the year ahead if you support us. So step up to the plate now. How much of the $15,000 can you do? Can you do $25? Can you do $50? The average gift is $100. Can you pledge that? Can you pledge $1,000 or $2,000 for the news right now? If you can, no matter the amount, give it. At this moment, as we start the 7 o'clock hour, here's the pledge line. It's 1-800-909-9287, or give at WBUR.org. It only takes 2 minutes to make a difference.
1-800-909-9287. So here's where we are. It's about 9, 10 minutes past 7, and we know that by 9 o'clock this morning, the House Democrats are expected to have a press conference to release their two articles of impeachment against President Trump: abuse of power, obstruction of Congress. And then we have, you know, after that, of course, they'll be dissecting that news for the rest of the morning. And as the week goes on, hearings and things like that. So we really, really need to get our fundraising in so that we can bring you this important news. I mean, we know that that's the most important thing, but the fact is we have to pay for it. And so 1-800-909-9287, WBUR.org, to help us do that in the most efficient way possible. And we can remember, Bob, I know, we go back to when there were, 3 or 4 weeks of fundraising.
Yeah, that's not, 3 weeks is not an exaggeration.
Several months at times.
Yeah, some of those drives are still going on somewhere.
Somewhere, in some parallel reality. We're doing it as efficiently as possible because we count on you. 1-800-909-9287.
We want to be efficient with the fundraising anyway because we all want to get more news from WBUR. It's why we're all here. It's why you're here. And we need to be especially efficient, knowing that whenever these announcements like the one we're going to bring you at 9 o'clock, any hearings that we're going to continue to bring you, we have to be efficient to be able to work around those. So all the more reason to get into this fundraiser right now while we're asking you, while we hope you've got just 2 minutes, that's all you need, and a contribution of any amount that you can give. We'd love to send you one of our thank you gifts. We've got WBUR socks. We've got Sunday River. A day of skiing, a lift ticket. You'd pay almost $120 for that anyway. But the deal on the table is if you give WBUR $120, we will be able to use all of that money to bring you the news. And Sunday River will give you a lift ticket to go skiing any day you want, holidays and weekends included, as thanks for your $120 contribution to WBUR. So get in on that. A lot of people already are. There aren't many passes left, and they will disappear pretty quickly. So go to the phone, call 1-800-909-9287 to make your contribution, or you can do it at WBUR.org.
You know, I would like to point out that yesterday we had to suspend fundraising at 9 o'clock in the morning, and folks just like you on the other end of the radio who are Morning Edition listeners really stepped up to the plate. They knew
they're in recovery
that
today.
They knew that we were going to shrink fundraising for the entire day into just a few hours in the morning, and they stepped up and helped us raise pretty close to a day's worth of fundraising in just a few short hours. If you didn't get a chance yesterday to help us out, then do it right now. Help pay for the rigorous journalism that helps your critical understanding of the news by giving to WBUR right now, because we are going to suspend fundraising for at least a while at 9 o'clock this morning so that we can bring you coverage of the Democrats unveiling their articles of impeachment. It's critical that you become a contributing listener to WBUR. Dial the number as we go to the news in a minute. It's 1-800-909-9287, or give right now at the website WBUR.org.
1-800-90.9 WBUR. And notice how Bob said you didn't have a chance. You didn't have an opportunity. That's the cockeyed optimist in us. We see this as your chance, your opportunity, right? Right? You see it that way, too? 1-800-909-9287, WBUR.org.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Rachel Martin. Good morning. The impeachment inquiry may start to feel real to a lot more people this morning. House Democrats are expected to unveil their articles of impeachment against President Trump this morning. Yesterday, lawyers for both parties laid out their cases in a public hearing. Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal was there. She's a Democrat from Washington State and a leader of the Progressive Caucus, and she joins us now. Thank you so much for being with us, Congresswoman.
Good morning. It's wonderful to be with you.
I know you don't want to get ahead of your party leadership in this announcement today, but what can you tell us about the scope of the articles of impeachment?
Well, we Judiciary Committee members met over the weekend. We met again last night after listening to the presentation from the Intel Committee, both majority and minority. We are meeting again this morning at 8 o'clock to talk about exactly how we apply that legal and constitutional framework to what we heard. And what I can tell you is that the president's abuse of power in essentially shaking down a foreign government to get them to interfere in our election and withholding taxpayer dollars, military aid that was desperately needed, is the core of the case. I think there is a pattern of conduct here that goes, to what we saw in the Mueller report that I think will somehow be incorporated. But what we're talking about is gross abuse of power.
You mentioned
obstruction of Congress.
So two things to follow up on there. Obstruction of Congress. So that is likely to be another article of impeachment, not just abuse of power?
Well, I don't want to get ahead, as you said, of the party, but I think that certainly, you know, what we heard the law professors testify to us last week is that when you have a president who believes that he is above the law and above any checks and balances, a president who is unprecedented in blocking and obstructing every witness from coming to testify, not providing any documents, and then he himself, as you know, not coming to testify before us or sending his legal counsel, that is a gross violation of the checks and balances. And that obstruction of Congress essentially means that we no longer have a democracy. We no longer have those checks and balances that the framers were so intent on providing, so that no one individual or one body, in this case, since we have three, would ever be unchecked in its power.
Republicans have criticized Democrats for trying to find a reason to impeach this president ever since the Mueller investigation and even before that. I mean, you referenced the Mueller report. Will the articles of impeachment include aspects of Mueller's investigation? Should it be that broad?
Well, certainly what we saw in the Mueller report was terrible and really, really substantive in its content. But what I will tell you is that what we're seeing unfolding in Ukraine is even worse, more egregious, because the president is already in office as he is soliciting this assistance in our elections from Ukraine, as he is coercing, I should say, Ukraine to get involved in our elections. So same pattern, but significantly worse, because now the president is in the White House.
Although there were no hearings, no witnesses during the inquiry as it pertains to the Mueller report. So is it fair to include that in potential articles?
Well, I don't know that we're necessarily, I mean, we're still in that process of determining, but I will tell you that, you know, in the Clinton impeachment as well, the only witness that came to testify was the special prosecutor. And so this is typical, where you would have the special prosecutor presenting the evidence. Yesterday on Ukraine, we had the Intel Committee present the evidence. This has been 8 months of witnesses and testimony about this president's conduct, and particularly about his abuse of power, which I think we have seen in multiple different ways, but obviously the most severe is what's unfolding in front of us with Ukraine.
Some Republicans have asked why. Why move so quickly? Why not let the courts, for example, rule on those subpoenas that the Trump administration is challenging? What's your answer to that?
Well, I have two answers. One is that the Republicans have actually obstructed us in getting any of the documents or the witnesses that we need. And that is unprecedented. I said, you know, as I said, Nixon tried to delay a little bit. He did go to court on one or two things. But for the most part, he provided his top officials to the committee, and he provided a lot of documents to the committee. This president has said blanketed, I am not cooperating with this investigation. And by doing that, he puts himself above Congress, which leads to the second thing and the most important, which is the gravity of the threat in front of us. This is a president who wants us to be a dictatorship or a monarchy, but not a democracy. And we know what's happened with Ukraine, but we have no idea what he is going to do next. If he's capable of this, he is capable of much more.
Big last question, looking for a short answer with our remaining time. If the Senate does not convict, if the president remains in office, will it all have been worth it?
We really can't think about what the Senate does. We swore an oath to the Constitution, and at the end of the day, it's up to us to look ourselves in the face every morning and every night and know that we did everything we could to save our democracy. And I hope Republicans have the courage of some of the civil servants that came to testify before us to actually look at the evidence, the overwhelming, uncontested facts that are in front of us, and do the right thing to save our democracy.
Representative Jayapal is a Democrat from Washington. She sits on the House Judiciary Committee. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Rachel.
NPR senior political correspondent and editor Domenico Montanaro was listening into that conversation. Domenico, we heard the congresswoman there reticent to outline the scope of these articles of impeachment, but she did reference Mueller. So I guess it's all up in the air at this point. She also said they're still meeting about this. It appears not to be finalized.
Yeah, look, I think that if you read between the lines of what the congresswoman said, it's pretty clear that they're not going to include the third bucket that we've been talking about, the obstruction of justice, as it relates to the Mueller report. She mentioned the Mueller report, but I think more in trying to lay out a, quote, pattern of conduct that was highlighted by the Mueller report, as she has noted. And that's been the debate. You know, they could still perhaps include that third bucket of obstruction of justice based on the Mueller report. But it sounds like behind the scenes and in listening to Congresswoman Jayapal right there, that they're not going to include this third bucket of obstruction of justice based on the Mueller report. And they may allude to the Mueller report in some fashion.
So just real quick, what happens next in terms of votes?
Yeah, I mean, the Judiciary Committee is going to have to vote on this. They're promising that they'll maybe do this by the end of the week, we could see. Then that would go to the full House, and the full House would vote on it. Democrats think that they definitely have the votes, especially if they don't include that third bucket of obstruction of justice. And then we're looking at a Senate trial in January.
NPR political editor Domenico Montanaro, thank you.
You're welcome.
President Trump won election in 2016 in part by breaching the blue wall. That's the way political strategists described blue states that Democrats thought he would never win. Industrial states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. On Thursday in the UK, Prime Minister Boris Johnson and his Conservative Party hope to breach the red wall. That's the political strategist term for blue-collar regions in the north of England that have long been strong for Johnson's Labour Party opposition. NPR's Frank Langfitt reports from the Red Wall, from a town called Bishop Auckland.
Karen Walton is making a milkshake at her cafe. It's in a near-deserted mall in this town of around 25,000, about 5 hours' drive north of London. Bishop Auckland is former coal country. Like most people here, Walton has always voted Labour, but this year feels different.
I'm still undecided, to be honest.
How are you leaning?
I'm kind of leaning more towards Conservatives, purely to be out of Europe.
Did you ever think you'd say that?
No, I never thought I would say that ever.
Why not?
I've grew up never to support Conservatives.
Labour has traditionally represented the working class of England's once industrial north, but people here also voted heavily for Brexit, which is why Walton thinks the Conservatives will win.
Voting-wise in this town, I don't think it's going to be Labour anymore this time round. I think it's going to be a shock.
Boris Johnson has pledged to, quote, get Brexit done. The Prime Minister may portray himself as a bumbling upper-class eccentric, but Walton says his Brexit message resonates here.
I think he's a crazy character, but when it comes to Brexit, I do think he would get us out and get us a good deal.
At the moment, the Conservatives are riding the wave only because the alternative is so appalling.
Brian Ramsey is sharing a pint with friends at a pub. He's talking about Jeremy Corbyn, leader of the opposition Labour Party. Corbyn has refused to take a side on Brexit, and some of his controversial past positions bother voters, like refusing specifically to denounce the Irish Republican Army and voting against renewing Trident, Britain's nuclear missile system.
Trident, nuclear, the IRA, all those things are enough for me to not be interested at all in giving him my vote. And I think a lot of people will be voting Tory and perhaps holding their noses while they do it.
Corbyn is deeply unpopular with the British public. The polling firm YouGov found that 61% viewed the Labour Party leader negatively. Boris Johnson has lots of detractors as well, including Ken Crozier, who's buying groceries this morning.
He's a liar. He's been sacked from two jobs for telling lies. And yet, you've got to put your trust in him.
The Conservative Party fired Johnson from a cabinet job after he lied about an affair, and the Times of London fired him when he was a journalist for making up a quote. Conservatives also have a bitter history in this part of the country. Under Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, the government shut down coal mines and crushed the miners' union.
I mean, I'm an ex-miner. I had 12 months on strike because of a Tory government. When Margaret Thatcher died, the miners' union had a party. You know, a ding-dong, the witch is gone party. You know what I mean?
Many voters here are too young to remember the miners' strike, but Crozier will never forget.
The Tory party has never done anything for working-class people, ever. I would sooner stick pins in my eyes and cut my arm off with a rusty spear than vote for Tory.
Still, Crozier worries the Tories will win on Thursday. People here are looking for hope. And Crozier says Johnson's promise of a bright economic future beyond Brexit appeals in an area that's never recovered from the loss of the mines. Frank Langfitt, NPR News, Bishop Auckland.
This is NPR News.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Boston Ballet's The Nutcracker, a holiday treat for the whole family, now through December 29th. Make memories to cherish with the ones you love, bostonballet.org. And the Academy at Penguin Hall, the only all-girls college prep school north of Boston, where girls blaze trails, accepting priority applications, penguinhall.org.
This is 90.9 WBUR. Bob Oakes, Jay Clayton, and Robin Young, all in the studio. We're going right back to the news in a couple of minutes. But first, we want to let you know how important your participation is right now at this moment in the WBUR year-end fundraiser, bringing you all the stories that you need to know about what's going on around the world, whether it's that little slice of political life you just heard about in England coming up to the very important British elections where Brexit is such an issue, or whether it's the latest on the impeachment proceedings and the unveiling at 9 o'clock this morning by Democrats of the two articles of impeachment. You know you can count on WBUR to stay well informed. You help keep us reliable and honest and thoughtful when you get behind us with a gift of a pledge. Here's the number to call. It's 1-800-909-9287 or give at WBUR.org. Trying to raise $15,000 this hour for all the news you're listening to. We have 13 to go thanks to folks who've already stepped up.
We know.
And thank you.
Yeah, we do thank you so much, and we know that you will. 1-800-909-9287, WBUR.org. About 7:26. That means we have about carry the four
34 minus, minutes.
Thank you, 34 minutes to get this amount that we need in this hour to stay on track. That's what it's about. It's about staying on track. And it's also about encouraging you. You know, we are encouraging you to come to us at the finish line here, make that phone call, and contribute to the news, all the news. I mean, Bob, you mentioned several stories, but I'm thinking, too, that volcanic eruption in New Zealand, it's just been pushed, you know, because of all the news, pushed off the radar. But another person has sadly died. They feel there might be 8 bodies on that island. These were tourists. We just came back from Iceland. We're going to have stories for you down the road on climate change in Iceland. We were scrambling all over, you know, volcanic fields, and they would say to us, oh, we have a plan if anything erupts. What's the plan? I mean, it's just the enormity of nature in that story. So many wildfires in Australia that sit in Sydney, the city of Sydney. Fire alarms are going off because of the smoke from wildfires. I mean, there's so much going on around the world. We try to bring it all to you with your help. 1-800-909-9287, WBUR.org.
And let's underscore with your help. Listener support accounts for about half of WBUR's funding. For all these stories that you listen to, that you've been listening to, that you're going to continue to count on listening to. So think about it this way. WBUR is here for you today because other listeners gave. Maybe you did. We thank you. If you have, if you haven't, this is our last fund drive for the year. And we are really counting on you for some of the money that it's going to take to keep bringing you all the important news in the weeks and the year ahead. So give what you can. We've got a day of skiing at Sunday River awaiting you as our thanks for your support, or a pair of WBUR socks if you'd like to get those. Either one, our thanks for your $120 contribution. You know, for the day of skiing, you'd pay about that anyway, but Sunday River donated the tickets so that you can put all of your money to work for the news coverage that you get and count on from WBUR. So it's a great deal. The tickets are going quickly. They're not going to last much longer. So before you miss your chance to get in on that, go to the phone, give at WBUR.org, or call 1-800-909-9287.
7:29 in the morning. Going back to the news in just about a minute. We have 31 minutes left to raise a little under $13,000. We're asking you to just pledge a little bit of that. Are you willing to put just a little bit of your money into independent journalism? Well, then how about the $50 gift that we hope you make right now, or the average gift, which is $100 to WBUR? But if you can give $1,000 or $2,000 at this moment in the year-end fundraiser, when you're putting all sorts of our organizations on a list of important organizations that you want to give to at the end of the year, we're asking you float WBUR to the top of that list and give now at WBUR.org or at 1-800-909-9287.
1-800-909-9287, WBUR.org. We know we're nudging you a little. We know that. And that's because we just, you know, we're keeping our eye on the news, and we just know that that's going to deserve time, and we just have to raise the money to help report it. So 1-800-909-9287, WBUR.org. You've been nudged. So I'm hoping it nudges you towards the phone.
Support for NPR comes from WBUR and from ProQuest, creators of ProQuest One Academic, unifying journals, ebooks, videos, and dissertations across disciplines in one mobile-enabled interface. ProQuest.com/go/NPR. CFA Institute. CFA charter holders are wealth managers committed to helping unlock opportunities for their clients' ambitious wealth goals. Learn more at therightquestion.org. And Simon & Schuster, publishers of The American Story. Conversations with master historians, David Rubenstein discusses the story of America with David McCullough, Doris Kearns Goodwin, and others. Available now where books are sold.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. Later this morning, House Democrats are expected to outline articles of impeachment against President Trump. NPR's Giles Snyder says this follows the latest impeachment hearing in the House Judiciary Committee.
Leading House Democrats have scheduled a press conference after meeting with Speaker Nancy Pelosi following Monday's nearly 10-hour-long Judiciary Committee hearing. During an event in Washington Monday night, Pelosi declined to discuss any formal charges, but they are expected to center on abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. The Judiciary Committee expected to vote on the articles this week, setting the stage for a full House vote ahead of the Christmas recess.
At the White House yesterday, President Trump described the impeachment effort as a disgrace. South Korea's defense minister says he's worried North Korea is preparing a long-range rocket test. This follows what Seoul describes as Pyongyang's recent test of a rocket engine. NPR's Anthony Kuhn reports on North Korea's latest response to a recent tweet from President Trump.
President Trump recently tweeted that if ruler Kim Jong-un resumes hostility, he could lose everything. In response, Kim Young-chol, a former envoy, said in a statement that Trump knows little about his country and should do more to prevent a military clash. Pyongyang says it wants the U.S. to make more concessions in order to resume stalled denuclearization talks.
This is NPR News from Washington.
This is 90.9 WBUR. Good morning. I'm Bob Oakes in Boston. Some Massachusetts prosecutors are accusing the State Sentencing Commission of violating the law. And those prosecutors, with the Massachusetts District Attorneys Association, are withdrawing from the panel that makes legislative recommendations and sentencing guidelines. The story from WBUR's Deborah Becker.
The association says the commission has not submitted its proposed sentencing guidelines to legislators as the law requires. The commission says it's following a long-standing practice of issuing its guidelines. The debate centers on advisory guidelines from the commission 2 years ago that some prosecutors say reduce recommended sentences for some violent crimes. Commission member and defense attorney Jack Kuna says ultimately judges decide.
The commission adopted advisory guidelines for use by judges in the judge's discretion. No judge is required to use the guidelines.
The Chief Justice of the trial court also says the guidelines are just a starting point. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Deborah Becker.
Hundreds of scholars across the country are criticizing Harvard's decision to deny tenure to a Latinx studies professor. More than 200 professors have sent a letter to Harvard saying Professor Lorgia Garcia Pena is nationally recognized in her field, and the school's decision to deny her tenure shows it doesn't recognize the value of Latinx studies. Harvard has declined to comment. Another controversy for the New England Patriots. The Pats acknowledge a video crew shooting a film about the Pats broke NFL rules by filming at the Cincinnati Bengals this past Sunday. The Pats play the Bengals this coming Sunday. The Pats say the video has been turned over to the NFL. In 2007, the NFL penalized the Pats for videotaping another team's signals in the Spygate scandal. Patrice Bergeron scored in his first game with the Bruins in more than 2 weeks last night, but the Bruins still lost to the Senators 5-2 in Ottawa. Bruins visit the Washington Capitals tomorrow. Celtics beat the Cleveland Cavaliers 110-88 last night at the Garden. Celts play the Pacers in Indianapolis tomorrow. And the forecast, cloudy, breezy, mild today. We'll have showers and rain this afternoon with highs today around 60 degrees. Tonight it changes over to freezing rain, sleet, and then snow as lows near the 30 mark. Tomorrow the snow will end late in the morning, but not before we get 1 to 4 inches, low 30s tomorrow. Thursday, sunny and near 30 degrees. Friday, sunny in the upper 30s. In Boston now, 56 degrees. 54 in Westboro, 53 in Lawrence, and 55 degrees in Fall River at 735.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Plymouth Rock Assurance, presenting the Boston Bruins and TD Garden Auto Insurance Program. Bruins fans can learn more at PlymouthRock.com/GoBruins. Total Wine and More, where in-store teams can recommend a bottle of wine, spirit, or beer for any occasion. Shoppers can explore more than 8,000 wines, 2,500 beers, and 3,000 spirits. More at TotalWine.com. And American Jewish World Service, working together for more than 30 years to build a more just and equitable world. Learn more at ajws.org.
This is WBUR. I'm Bob Oakes. Community activist Julia Mejia has won the recount for Boston's final at-large city council seat by a single vote. Mejia's opponent, Alejandra St. Guillen, will decide today whether to challenge the recount in court. WBUR's Simone Rios reports.
After dozens of volunteers hand-counted ballots over 3 days, Interim Elections Commissioner Aneida Tavares read the final count.
Alejandra Nicole St. Guillen, 22,491. Julia Mejia, 22,492.
Mejia says the results are a lesson in the importance of voting.
It feels incredibly overwhelming to win by one vote. It really goes to reinforce the message that we've been promoting all along, is that every vote matters. And I think now we have an amazing lesson to share with the city of Boston of like how important they are in this process.
Fewer than 10 votes separated the candidates in election night results last month. Yesterday, the candidates were tied and the recount wasn't resolved until the City Election Commission finished deliberating over two contested ballots, one cast by a voter who had moved to Brookline and the other by a Boston resident who voted in the wrong precinct. The commission decided to toss the Brookline resident's ballot and count the vote of the Boston resident, which went for Mejia. But St. Guillen spokesperson Alec Loftus says the campaign disagrees with the recount results.
We believe that there are outstanding votes that, if contested in a court, would put Alejandra St. Guillen in the lead.
Loftus says St. Guillen will announce today whether to go to court to get certain ballots counted. Mejia says she welcomes the next round in her bid to be the first Latina on the Boston City Council. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Simone Rios.
The Massachusetts man who helped popularize the Ice Bucket Challenge and raised millions of dollars for ALS research has died of the disease. Pete Frates was 34 years old. The Beverly native was a star athlete, first at St. John's Prep and then Boston College. But, as WBUR's Callum Borchers reports, Frates made his greatest impact after ALS began to take a toll on his body.
Here's the number nine hitter in the order.
Frates captained the BC baseball team with a powerful left-handed swing that, at times, looked a bit like Lou Gehrig's.
And that is hit high and deep. Jowers going back. Jowers launches it out of here. That's a grand slam home run for Peter Frates.
Frates wasn't Gehrig's equal on the field, but he may have matched the Hall of Famer in drawing attention to the disease they shared. It was Gehrig's diagnosis in 1939 and this famous speech at Yankee Stadium that put a largely unknown condition in the spotlight.
That I might have been given a bad break, but I've got an awful lot to live for.
Frates adopted the same attitude as he battled what's often called Lou Gehrig's disease. It's a fatal neurological condition that slowly erodes muscle function. People with ALS lose the ability to speak, walk, and eventually breathe on their own. While Gehrig introduced many Americans to ALS, Frates became a rainmaker, literally and figuratively. Here he is accepting an award for his advocacy from the ALS Therapy Development Institute. It was 2012, just 8 months after he was diagnosed.
For me, I'm going to hopefully capitalize on this and realize that this is a lot in life I've been given and be able to go forward and get you all the money and resources that you so deservedly need.
Frates' fundraising breakthrough came a couple of years later with this, a bucket of ice water. On Facebook in the summer of 2014, he challenged a mix of friends and celebrities, including Tom Brady and Julian Edelman, whose splash you just heard, to dump water on their heads. or donate to the ALS Association to avoid getting cold and wet. Ultimately, the Patriots donated and staged a team dousing, led by owner Robert Kraft.
So on three, one, two, three.
Frady's didn't invent the Ice Bucket Challenge. It's a fundraising gambit that philanthropy experts say has been around for a while. But Frady's connections in the sports world helped make it a viral sensation. Top athletes like LeBron James posted videos of their soakings on social media. So did Oprah, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and Bill Gates.
I'm here to join the people bringing attention to Lou Gehrig's disease by taking the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge.
Critics of the challenge said it could encourage something called slacktivism. Remember, the premise was anyone willing to get drenched didn't have to give any money, so participants could claim to be activists while slacking on the donations. But it turned out that a lot of people opened the icy floodgates and their wallets, too. Paul Shervish founded the Center on Wealth and Philanthropy at Frady's alma mater, Boston College. He says people like to feel that they're making a difference.
And that was what was going on in the Ice Bucket Challenge. When you got that dumped on you, that emphasized you were the actor, not the organization. And that is a major reversal in the understanding of fundraising that organizations need to learn.
Over 8 weeks in 2014, the Ice Bucket Challenge raised $115 million, according to the ALS Association. Most of the money went toward research. It even helped scientists discover a new gene that contributes to the disease. But as Frady's health inevitably worsened in recent years, he and his family turned their fundraising focus toward caring for patients with advanced ALS.
The care is just overwhelming.
That's Frady's mother, Nancy, in an online video for the Frady's Family Foundation, which earned nonprofit status in May. She says funding research is vital, but in the meantime, there are patients who need round-the-clock assistance.
The care versus cure is a debate that we have all the time in the ALS world, because the cure is probably going to be for those soon to be diagnosed. The care is for people who are living today with the disease.
Frady spoke openly about the demands his care placed on loved ones, especially his wife Julie, who now must raise their young daughter without him. Through his family's foundation, part of Frady's legacy will be helping to ease the burden on other families by paying for medical equipment, home health aids, and similar expenses. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Callum Borchers.
I'm Tiziana Deering. The holidays are here, and finding that perfect gift for everyone on your list is tough. No, it's not. Give WBUR. For your nephew, who fancies himself a comedian, he gets more Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Your sister, who loves actors, musicians, and authors, she'll get more Fresh Air with Terry Gross. And the grandkids? It is a gift they will rely on for the rest of their lives. Because you'll be supporting a legacy of independent journalism, so they can make sense of the world as they build their own futures. So this holiday season, give WBUR. Do your one-stop shopping with us. Make your tax-deductible donation right now. Here's how.
Dial the number. It's as easy as that. Protect independent journalism, as Tiziana says, by calling 1-800-909-9287 or giving at WBUR.org. You know the value of the truth? Now stand up for it by giving to WBUR. At this moment, 7:44 in the morning, when between now and 8 o'clock in just 16 minutes, we need to raise another $12,000 for the news. That's the goal. By 8 o'clock this morning, another $12,000, one pledge at a time. Your pledge next, we hope, of $50, $100, whatever you think you can afford, whatever the news is worth to you in this season of giving. Again, the phone number, 1-800-909-9287.
Or WBUR.org, 1-800-909-9287. We've got about 15 minutes, 16, I'm going to say 16, to try to make that goal. And why are we doing this? Well, it's because at 9 o'clock we're going to stop fundraising for at least a short while. As House Democrats announced there, we're hearing two articles of impeachment against President Trump: obstruction of justice, abuse of power. We got to clear the runway for that and let that land. But that means that we need to hear from you. 1-800-909-9287, WBUR.org. In this time, Jay, when, as Bob said, I mean, we are living in upside-down world. It is heartbreaking in some ways to see. For instance, we had the Attorney General, the Inspector General's report yesterday concluding that the Russia investigation was completely valid and legal and there was no spying on the Trump campaign, although there were some terrible mistakes made in getting a warrant for a Trump campaign worker. But the warrant wasn't warrantless. You know, it was the warrant itself was valid. And we are hearing on Fox News the complete opposite of that. They are reporting this as a report that debunks the Russia investigation, says there was spying in the campaign. It's the complete opposite of the truth. It is heartbreaking, but it also means we need you now more than ever to get the truth out. 1-800-909-9287.
We can't promise that you'll always like the truth, that you'll always like everything you hear on WBUR, but we promise it will be the truth, and we promise it will be treated fairly with balanced journalistic standards that you don't find just anywhere, but you do find them here at WBUR. Listener contributions are critical because they add up to about half of the funding that makes WBUR possible and keeps WBUR commercial free. So it really does matter whether you give. And, you know, just to reference something you heard in that last story from Callum Borchers, when you give to any organization, you want to feel like you're making a difference. Well, you hear how you make a difference when you give to WBUR in stories like the one that you just heard. You're able to hear that because of listener support. So at the end of this year, the last fundraiser for the year, please chip in. Please do what you can. We've got a day of skiing any day, including weekends and holidays at Sunday River in Bethel, Maine. Our thanks and theirs for your contribution of $120. You'd pay that for the lift ticket just about anyway, but the deal here is all of that $120 will bring you the news because Sunday River donated the tickets.
Thank you.
However, we've only got about 190 of them left, and there are more than 10,000 people listening along with you right at this moment. So the math says get to the phone quickly. The math says get to the web quickly so you don't miss out on this. 800-909-9287 is the number to call. 800-909-9287 and WBUR.org.
For the same $10 pledge, you can also, if you're not a skier, take away the WBUR socks by the Sock Club. They're
really cool.
I'm holding
them up. Why I'm holding them up, I don't know.
Because well, it's easier than holding up Sunday River.
They've got stripes and geometric shapes on them. They're yellow, sort
orange.
Of orange and black. Lovely, lovely pair of socks. They're like designer WBUR socks. Wear them proudly, knowing that you've pledged to support the radio station that gives you independent journalism. You want a free press? Well, you know something? We're asking you right now to pay for it. Give us a quick $10 a month pledge. Give us $50 or $100 all at once. Give us whatever the news is worth to you, but give it right now when we still have $11,000 to raise in about 12 minutes before 8 o'clock this morning. 1-800-909-9287 or give at WBUR.org.
1-800-909-9287. On a very much lighter note, the other day when the president was speaking and got excited about the stock market and he called it the Sock Rocket. And it turns out there is a sock company called the Sock Rocket, and they did well for a little while. But we've got these socks here for you. And all you have to do is call 1-800-909-9287. Get your own WBUR socks. Wear them proudly. Pull up your pant leg. Show them off. Tell people that you are a supporter of this fantastic radio station. 1-800-909-9287.
Support for NPR comes from WBUR and from Zoom. Zoom offers cloud video conferencing, online meetings, and a video conference room solution in one platform featuring digital video and audio with screen sharing, account registration, and more at zoom.us. And the Melville Charitable Trust, driven by one goal, ending homelessness for good. Learn more online at melvilletrust.org and on Twitter at @MelvilleTrust.
This is WBUR. Now in Bostonomics Business, a new report makes the case that Boston and a handful of other cities are sucking up too many jobs in the innovation industry. WBUR's Adrian Ma explains.
The report from the Brookings Institution defines innovation industries as those that spend the most on research and development and have a heavy need for science, engineering, and tech workers. Over a 12-year period starting in the mid-2000s, The report says 90% of new innovation jobs came from just five metro areas: San Francisco, San Jose, Seattle, San Diego, and Boston. The authors argue this hyper-concentration of tech talent is detrimental to smaller cities, and they say it hurts cities like Boston by boosting rents and taxing local infrastructure. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Adrian Ma.
This is WBUR at 7:50.
Funding for WBUR's business report comes from Carbonite, protecting email, spreadsheets, calendars, and more with Carbonite, because businesses can stop when they lose data. Carbonite, cloud backup for small businesses.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Rachel Martin.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Good morning. Russia's foreign minister drops by Washington today. He meets President Trump, whose story touches Russia again and again. Investigators established that Russia assisted Trump's 2016 election. Russia's war with Ukraine is the backdrop of an impeachment inquiry. President Trump took a dim view of Russia's enemy and withheld U.S. military aid to Ukraine while seeking political favors. Now the war in Ukraine could pause. The presidents of Russia and Ukraine met yesterday and agreed to a ceasefire. The meeting was in Paris, which is where we find NPR's Eleanor Beardsley. Hi there, Eleanor.
Good morning, Steve.
What was this meeting like?
Well, you know, it went on for hours and hours and didn't break up until after midnight. So here's this press conference, you know, after midnight. You had this young neophyte politician, Volodymyr Zelensky, meeting with the strongman who's run Russia for 20 years, Vladimir Putin, and continues to create havoc in Ukraine. So everyone is watching body language and faces. And Zelensky and Putin were at the far ends of the table, separated by their mediators, German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President Emmanuel Macron. Zelensky spoke first, right after the host, Macron, and he appeared nervous, but what he said seemed heartfelt. Here he is. You can hear him. So he said he had all of Ukrainians with him in Paris, and he felt their support. He said he also had truth with him and the desire for justice and peace in his own country. He said the meetings were long, but they were concrete and important, and that the dialogue had been unblocked. Zelensky also asserted that Ukraine is an independent and free country, and its future will be decided by Ukrainians. And he asserted that Donbass, that's eastern Ukraine, and Crimea are part of Ukraine. Remember, Russia took Crimea 5 years ago and is still destabilizing eastern Ukraine.
Well, what exactly did they agree on then, given that Russian forces still control a lot of Ukraine?
Right. Well, they agreed on a ceasefire before the end of the year, but I might add that there have been 20 ceasefires in this war, so will it hold? But what was really important and is very concrete and measurable is they agreed to exchange all prisoners before New Year's Eve, so that will be measurable. And also they agreed by next March to withdraw forces from three major conflict zones, and this crisis group is going to meet again in 4 months.
When you say crisis group, it includes Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, the host of this meeting in Paris where you are. What is his perspective on all this?
Well, France has taken a lead role in trying to solve this situation. Macron has actually spoken recently of getting a new dynamic between the West and Russia, you know, retying Russia to Europe. He wants a reset, and it's actually one of the things that Macron and President Trump agree upon. Also, you know what, Steve? Macron needs a win. He needs a win on the international stage. He's not in good shape at home. I don't know if you've heard, but there's huge strikes and protests in Paris, and there's going to be huge protests today against his pension overhaul. So I spoke with analyst Christian Macarion. He's editor of L'Express magazine, and here's what he said about the talks.
Macron needs something very concrete about Ukraine. And if there is someone who can help him, it's Zelensky. Because Zelensky is also in a corner because of the Trump affair.
So, you know, he said they need each other. And you know what? You could see that, Steve. While Zelensky spoke, he would look down the table over at Macron, and Macron would look at him and smile. It was almost like a smile of encouragement. His guide, he was buttressing Zelensky, you know, encouraging him to keep going. It was very interesting.
Appreciate your observant eye, Eleanor. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve.
That's NPR's Eleanor Beardsley in Paris.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Boathouse, presenting Catholic Charities of Boston, which asks, what makes our community stronger? It's people helping people get back on their feet. With housing, food, child care, and more, you can help 165,000 people each year. Donate today at ccab.org/donate. And DentaQuest, improving the oral health of all by increasing access, affordability, and awareness. That's Preventistry. More at preventistry.org.
This is 90.9 WBUR. Bob Oakes and Jay Clayton here for just a minute before we go right back to the day's top stories at 8 o'clock this morning, when we'll tell you the latest on impeachment, with the House due to unveil the two articles of impeachment at 9 o'clock this morning. We're going to bring you that live as we've continued our commitment to covering all the breaking news out of Washington around this issue and so many others of the last few years. You know, your stories like the one you heard earlier this morning about the U.S.-Iran prisoner swap. You're hearing the latest from the talks between Russia and Ukraine. You're getting the latest local news as well here on WBUR, including the story about safety, a new report on safety deficiencies at the MBTA. We bring it all to you, but it comes at a cost. It takes a lot of money to help pay for the news here on WBUR. We're asking you to give just a little bit back right now at this moment in the WBUR year-end fundraiser, the last one of the year. It's going to end in just a couple of days. And we need your help right now, though, at this moment, at 7:56 in the morning, because in the next 4 minutes, we need to raise $8,900 to keep things on track, which means having the money it takes to pay for the news. The number to call is 1-800-909-9287, or give it the website.
1-800-909-9287 or 1-800-90.9-WBUR. Okay, well, that's a big lift. 4 minutes to do that. But, you know,
just
maybe...
just take a part of it.
Take a little... that's exactly what I was going to say.
Huh.
You know, just take a little piece of it. Just one little piece. What piece can you do? 25, 50, 100, 120 for 120. There's still some of the ski trips left. Jay's going to tell you about that. There's socks. I mean, there's always the news. What can you do? What part can you take? 1-800-909-9287, WBUR.org.
We don't put WBUR programs on the radio to make as much money as we can. There is a model for that on the commercial side of radio. We are different. We are a nonprofit organization. We simply seek to raise the money that it takes to bring you the programs that you've already decided this matters to you. You want to get your news from WBUR and NPR. You do that every day. Now we hope you will take just 2 minutes and support WBUR so we have the money in place that will enable you to keep hearing the news in the year ahead. And as Robin mentioned, we've got WBUR socks. We've got lift tickets to go skiing for the day at Sunday River in Bethel, Maine. You can have either one of those gifts as our thanks for your contribution of $120, and we will use all that money to bring you the news.
You now, can have Jay. We'll give you Jay.
You can have me for a lot less than $120.
That's right.
That's right.
Any donation.
That's right. And the temperatures are forecast to hit 60 degrees in some parts around us today, but there is already a lot of snow at Sunday River.
2 feet.
Yeah. Here's Darcy Lambert from Sunday River.
We have earned the reputation for having the most dependable snow in New England, and that is hands down the result of us being able to make snow when others either can't or won't, and what we do with the snow once we make it. So we have a dedicated grooming team.
Darcy Lambert.
Oh, wait, they have a dedicated grooming team. We could use that.
Yes, we could bring you could bring your dog. Oh, not that
especially
kind of
early, especially early in the morning.
Do that's blow dry?
Yeah, it could be. So, if you want to go skiing for a day at Sunday River, including, by the way, weekends or holidays, there are no restrictions on these lift tickets, except there aren't many left. So, if you want to get one before they're gone, give $120 for us to bring you the news. We'll send you the lift ticket as our thanks to go to Sunday River for the day, or the pair of WBUR socks if you'd like those instead. 1-800-909-9287 is the number to call. You can also give at WBUR.org.
Please. please?
Less than 200 lift tickets left and thousands of people listening. So before you miss out, get in on it with your call or your online contribution.
All right, we've got about a minute left till 8 o'clock. The good news is that in the last couple of minutes, a bunch of pairs of socks and a bunch of lift tickets have gone out the door. We raised another $2,000 for the news. Yes, thank you very much for calling. If you haven't, now is the time to help us out. 1-800-909-9287 or give at WBUR.org. It's your radio station. It's your news station. Get behind it now. Become a contributing listener.
1-800-909-9287. You know, those socks walking out the door, that was amazing to see. But socks have been going out the door. The fabulous WBUR socks, it's the kind of thing you can give for a gift for Christmas to a WBUR listener. But any call you make, any contribution you make online is a gift to BUR listeners. That's what it's all about. You are giving the gift to yourself and your community. 1-800-909-9287, WBUR.org. Thank you so much for taking a big bite out of this, but let's keep going. 1-800-909-9287.
You're listening to 90.9 WBUR-FM Boston,
92.7 WBUA Tisbury,
89.1 WBUH Brewster,
streaming at WBUR.org,
and live at City Space, Boston's new home for public conversation,
WBUR, Boston's NPR news station.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. In an hour, House Democrats are supposed to announce articles of impeachment against the president. NPR's Domenico Montanaro has more.
We expect there'll be at least two articles of impeachment, one related to abuse of power and bribery, and one on obstruction of Congress. Democrats feel like they've made the case, that they've presented overwhelming and compelling evidence that the president abused his power by pressuring a foreign country to help investigate a political rival to help his 2020 reelection. That's essentially what it comes down to for them. Republicans think that that's just not true. They said that that Ukrainian leaders say there was no pressure. The aid was eventually released.
NPR's Domenico Montanaro. President Trump is criticizing FBI Director Christopher Wray after the Justice Department released an investigation into the origins of the probe into election interference. The investigation found no evidence of political bias, but documented errors. Today, President Trump claimed on Twitter Wray cannot fix the FBI, although Wray is already implementing 40 corrective actions. Russia's foreign minister is in Washington. NPR's Giles Snyder reports he is expected to meet with President Trump today at the White House.
The White House has not said much about the meeting between President Trump and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, but it is on the president's official schedule released last night. Earlier Monday, a senior administration official confirmed the meeting, saying the two will meet along with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to discuss the state of the bilateral relationship. Lavrov's visit comes as House Democrats move forward with impeachment proceedings focused on Ukraine and a day after the Justice Department's internal watchdog determined that the FBI was justified in opening its investigation into links between Russia and the 2016 Trump campaign, but found fault in the FBI's surveillance of a former campaign advisor. Giles Snyder, NPR News, Washington.
The International Court of Justice began hearing arguments today brought against Myanmar. This is for alleged genocide against its Muslim minority Rohingya. Michael Sullivan has more from Bangkok.
It was the African nation of Gambia that brought the case, and it was Gambia's Justice Minister, Abubakar Tambadu, who addressed the court with an impassioned plea.
This is a stain on our collective conscience. And it will be irresponsible for any of us to simply look the other way and pretend that it is not our business, because it is our business.
Gambia is seeking to get the court to approve so-called provisional measures against Myanmar to keep it from carrying out further violence against the Rohingya while the court considers the broader case. Myanmar's de facto leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, will lead her country's defense on Wednesday. For NPR News, I'm Michael Sullivan in Bangkok.
You're listening to NPR News from Washington.
This is 90.9 WBUR. Good morning. I'm Bob Oakes in Boston. It appears community activist Julia Mejia is on her way to the Boston City Council. A three-day recount of November's election results shows Mejia beat opponent Alejandra St. Guillen by a single vote. WBUR's Simone Rios has the latest.
Mejia was in front of Saint-Guillen by less than 10 votes on election night. At the end of the recount last night, the two were tied before the city's election commission decided to include a single ballot that went in Mejia's favor. Now it will be up to Saint-Guillen to decide whether to challenge in court, says her campaign spokesperson, Gina Cristo.
There are still questions about the way the ballots are counted, but a court process is extremely arduous. Alejandra will make a decision about whether or not that's something that she wants to put her family through and herself through.
For her part, Mejia says the final tally shows the importance of every vote. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Simon Rios.
Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley and House Speaker Robert DeLeo are both voicing concerns about the safety of the MBTA. It follows an independent review out yesterday, which found the T has not conducted adequate maintenance and inspections in years. Carmen Bianco, former New York City Transit president, worked on this T report.
We also found an inadequate headcount. So there's simply just not enough people working in the maintenance areas to do that work.
Congresswoman Pressley is urging state officials to re-examine the T's safety protocols. Speaker DeLeo says long-term funding is needed to ensure that safety on the T is paid for. U.S. Senators Ed Markey and Elizabeth Warren are now both pushing Major League Baseball to reconsider its plan to cut ties with some minor league teams, including the Spinners in Lowell. They've sent a letter to the baseball commissioner, Rob Manfred, saying that the team is important to the community. Congresswoman Lori Trahan is leading a congressional effort to block the baseball plan. Worcester State University is investigating swastikas found drawn in a men's bathroom. The school says the graffiti was discovered late last week and has been removed. The university is now planning to hold inclusion programming this spring for students, staff, and for faculty. Sports: Celtics topped the Cleveland Cavaliers 110-88 last night at the Garden for their fourth straight win. Celts visit Indiana tomorrow. The Bruins lost their third straight last night, falling to the Senators 5-2 in Ottawa. The Bruins visit the Washington Caps tomorrow. Forecast: warm during the day today, then some snow tonight. It'll be around 60 today. Wet today with showers and rain, but late tonight, the temperatures plummet and it changes over to freezing rain and snow. Snow will end tomorrow morning, but we'll get 1 to 4 inches from this tonight. It'll be in the 30s tomorrow. Sunny skies on Thursday and Friday and in the 30s both days. In Boston now, 57 degrees, 55 in Needham, 55 in Peabody, and 55 in Milton at 8:07.
WBUR supporters include iDrive, providing cloud backup, full system backup, and on-site iDrive appliance to protect PCs, Macs, and servers from data loss due to crashes and ransomware at iDrive.com/NPR.
Hi, it's Jeremy Hobson. As the year ends and we gather together to celebrate, we hope you'll give WBUR. No matter the amount of your gift, we promise to turn your money into more of the vital news and programs that you've come to expect, even as 2020 brings the unexpected. Your gift matters, so don't wait. Give WBUR right now. Here's how.
You just dial the number. It takes only 2 minutes to pledge to WBUR. The phone number, the pledge line, is 1-800-909-9287, or give online at WBUR.org. We're asking you, in the spirit of the season, give a gift we can all use every day: real, honest journalism, which is what you know you get from WBUR. If you've been listening for years, you know we've been delivering the news that way to you for years. If you're a new listener and you've just found us and you love us already, then maybe make your first ever gift right now. We had a great hour last hour. We raised about $10,000 for the news that you listen to. The goal this hour is to raise $15,000. We need your help to do it. One pledge at a time. Your $50, maybe first ever gift, your continuing pledge for $100 or a couple of $100 or $1,000 or $2,000. Dial the number. It's 1-800-909-9287 or give at WBUR.org.
800-909-9287. Again, the number to call, or WBUR.org. About half of the funding for Morning Edition and everything else that you listen to on WBUR is the contributions that our listeners give in these fund drives. It may be a little bit of money for you. We just ask you to give what you comfortably can, but it is important to give because it adds up to the source of money that really creates WBUR's editorial independence and allows us to bring you the news commercial free. So for all the reasons that you listen, make a contribution right now. We've got some great ways to thank you for your support. We've got WBUR socks. We've got lift tickets to go skiing for a day at Sunday River any day, including weekends and holidays this season. You can have either one of those gifts as our thanks for your contribution of $120 that we'll use to bring you the news. And on the lift tickets, a note, we've only got 172 of these left. And that may seem like a lot, but there are tens of thousands of people listening right now to WBUR. And a lot of them are calling and a lot of them are getting these tickets. So before you miss your chance to get them, go to the phone or the web if you want that to be the way you support WBUR in this year-end fund drive. The number to call is 800-909-9287, and you can also give at WBUR.org.
And we've already given away dozens and dozens of these ski tickets this year, this morning, as people call and pledge their support for the news that they value here at WBUR. We're asking you to consider how important WBUR is to you, and we're asking you to give right now. These are, as you know, unprecedented and unpredictable times, but what hasn't changed in the last many months that it's been this way is the fact that WBUR is reliable, that we're delivering real journalism to you, and we're doing it every hour of every day. Give a little back right now. Show that you're behind us. Make a pledge at 1-800-909-9287 or give a little back at WBUR.org.
Again, 800-909-9287 and WBUR.org. It'll take you just 2 minutes to give to support the news. We've got now $14,000 left to raise by 9 o'clock. At 9 o'clock, we are going to pause the fundraiser so we can hear the Democratic House announcement of what's expected to be two articles of impeachment against President Trump. We will bring you live coverage of that from NPR at 9 o'clock this morning. We are pausing the fundraiser, basically working around the hearings this week, and we are doing that because that is our commitment to you. But it also means that when we have a moment to ask you for some support, it's really important to provide what part of that support you can give, whether it's $25 or $50, $2,500, any amount that works for you is what we are counting on you to give, because listener support is WBUR. This kind of radio station doesn't exist without your financial support each year. So please give now at WBUR.org or call 800-909-9287. Take away a pair of socks or a day of skiing at Sunday River as our thanks for a $120 contribution to help us bring you the news.
It's important to work together to protect independent journalism in these times. We do our part by producing the independent journalism that you've come to value. We're asking you to do your part now by becoming a contributing listener, because contributing listeners provide us with about half the funding it takes to give you all the news that you listen to. The number to call is 1-800-909-9287. You can give also at WBUR.org. The good news is that in the last couple of minutes, we've taken in a couple thousand dollars worth of pledges, thanks to you folks who've called and given online, delivering us that money to pay for the news. Now it's up to you. Now it's your turn to step up for independent, thoughtful, thorough, complete journalism. 1-800-909-9287 or at WBUR.org. The time is 8:13.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Rachel Martin. The FBI had every right to open its investigation into possible ties between the Trump campaign and Russia. That's the main conclusion from a report by the Justice Department's internal watchdog, Inspector General Michael Horowitz. And this conclusion directly contradicts President Trump's false claim that the investigation was politically motivated. But Horowitz also found serious shortcomings in how the Bureau handled its surveillance of a former Trump campaign advisor. President Trump lashed out at FBI Director Christopher Wray this morning. He said Wray will, quote, never be able to fix the FBI, which is badly broken. But it was James Comey who led the FBI in the early stages of the investigation into the Trump campaign. Yesterday, NPR's Ari Shapiro asked Comey how those mistakes happened.
I'm not sure. I've read the report. I think the inspector general found something like 17 separate mistakes, and that is really unfortunate and really important that he found them so they can be fixed. And that's a worthwhile part of any inspector general report. And so I don't want to step away from that, but I want to underscore nothing was done with political bias or with improper motivation.
So many errors entered into their surveillance petitions around Carter Page. If the FBI had this many mistakes, even on a high-profile, politically sensitive case, do you think there's a broader problem with FBI agents taking a cavalier attitude to eavesdropping on Americans?
I don't. I think there is a problem with human beings working hard and making assumptions and not realizing that other people are making different assumptions. They make mistakes, but they are good people, well overseen and checked.
All right. For more on the implications of the Horowitz report, we're joined by NPR justice correspondent Ryan Lucas. Thanks for coming in, Ryan.
Thank you.
There was a lot of buildup to this report, a lot of people looking for their own vindication from this. Explain more about what the inspector general said here.
So this is a 400-plus page report, so there's a lot in it. Some good for the FBI, some bad. But two of the big takeaways are that the FBI had sufficient evidence to open its investigation into possible ties between the Trump campaign and Russia. And the inspector general found no evidence of political bias in the decision to launch that investigation. And those two findings are a big deal. They contradict, as you said, the allegation from some conservatives that the investigation was driven by political hostility against Trump. But there were also some very serious problems with the FBI's investigation, as we heard in that clip from Ari and Comey at the top. That relates to the FBI surveillance of former Trump campaign foreign policy advisor Carter Page. The inspector general documents 17 significant inaccuracies or omissions in the FBI's applications to get court approval for surveillance on Page. Leaving that information out, according to the inspector general, made the case for surveillance look stronger than it actually was.
So here we are in the middle of an impeachment inquiry. The House is expected to lay out their articles of impeachment today. It's a highly polarized time. Right. I mean, that's like the understatement of the year. So how did Democrats and Republicans respond to this report?
So on the political front, the sides very much just retreated to their respective corners. The president described the findings as being far worse than he thought possible. He said the investigation amounted to essentially a coup. Unsurprisingly, the top Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee, Jerry Nadler, had a very different interpretation of this report. He said that it debunks deep state conspiracy theories. Internally, within the Justice Department, the response to the report has varied. FBI Director Chris Wray said the Bureau accepts the inspector general's findings. He says he's ordered steps to be taken to address the report's recommendations. That includes changes to the FBI's surveillance practices. Attorney General William Barr, on the other hand, released a pretty scathing statement that in many ways pushes back against some of the report's central conclusions. He called Barr called the FBI's investigation intrusive, and he said that it was based on, quote, the thinnest of suspicions. And in his view, he said those suspicions were insufficient to justify the steps that were taken.
So now, I mean, Attorney General Barr, not only has he released this statement under calling into question the IG's conclusions, he's actually launched his own investigation. He asked that U.S. Attorney John Durham launch an investigation into this very thing. How is this different than what the Horowitz report was looking at?
So Durham is investigating similar issues to Horowitz, but is understood to be looking at U.S. spy agencies and foreign intelligence services as well. He's been traveling internationally to meet with foreign intelligence officials. He and the attorney general have enlisted the president's help to try to open doors for Durham overseas. Now, Durham released his own statement yesterday, and that's a rarity because he's known for being very tight-lipped. And what Durham said was that based on the evidence that he's collected so far in his investigation, he disagrees with some of the inspector general's conclusions, particularly about how the FBI opened his investigation.
Even though he's not even done with his own investigation.
It's still ongoing.
So it was pretty exceptional to have released that. NPR justice correspondent Ryan Lucas, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Long before she was a 2020 Democratic presidential candidate, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren was a Republican. When did that change? Well, she taught law at the University of Texas, and it was there that Warren's political identity emerged. The ideas she stresses now about a shrinking middle class and a government that benefits the wealthy came from her academic research. NPR's Asma Khalid has the story.
In the fall of 1981, Calvin Johnson used to walk a block and a half from his house to hitch a ride to work with Elizabeth Warren. They were both teaching at the University of Texas Law School in Austin and would debate public policy during their commutes.
We would go in and we would argue all the way in, and then we would take a temporary respite to teach our courses and do research, and then we'd argue all the way back.
Johnson, who has long considered himself a liberal Democrat, remembers thinking Warren's opinions were strange.
She was quite consistently pro-business, and I'm sure she would not like to be called anti-consumer.
But he did think she was anti-consumer. He remembers one particularly fierce debate about public utility accounting. It's wonky. Johnson says at the time, utility companies were raking in huge profits and abusing the ratepayers.
She came out very strongly in favor of business, industry, the utilities.
Warren was not overtly partisan at the time, but she was guided by a law and economics movement that was sweeping through universities. Critics say this movement was trying to proselytize professors into believing a conservative, pro-market worldview. And Warren was a believer, according to some of her colleagues. Around this time, she also became increasingly interested in bankruptcy. And when she talks about her attitude from the time, she sounds kind of Reagan-esque. Here she is reading from her memoir, A Fighting Chance.
I might not have said so at the time, but I think I was on the lookout for cheaters and deadbeats as a way to explain who was filing for bankruptcy.
In 1978, Congress had passed a new bankruptcy code.
There was an enormous amount of contention over the new code.
That's Warren's longtime research collaborator, Jay Westbrook. He still teaches law at the University of Texas.
The creditors were saying, oh, people are just getting away with murder. They're not paying their debts. They're getting an easy discharge. And we wanted to know if that was true or not.
So Westbrook and Warren helped lead a massive multi-state study to figure out who was filing for bankruptcy and why. Here's one of Warren's former research assistants, Kimberly Winnick, who helped her go through a lot of the files.
And this is back when it was all paper. And we'd show up with a portable copying machine. And, you know, it rolled like a rollerboard suitcase. And you get it there with reams of paper and start copying.
They would then sift through the paper files. Catherine Nicholson, another one of Warren's research assistants, says they were looking for answers to specific questions.
Was the debtor employed? Were there medical bills? I mean, what kind of debts did they have? Was it unsecured debt? Did they run up everything on credit cards? Had there been a divorce in the family recently?
That's just empirical data.
That's Warren's other research assistant, Kimberly Winnick, again.
I mean, that is how she works. Ask a question that's a clean question and get an answer.
Winnick took three classes with Warren, and she says one thing she admires about her old professor is that when the facts became irrefutable, Warren was willing to re-examine her own opinions. Winnick doesn't remember talking politics with Warren, but she had a hunch her old teacher thought people filing for bankruptcy were gaming the system. The research ended up illustrating a different story. Here's Warren's co-author, Jay Westbrook, again.
She saw more of the very difficult side of life of the people who go through the bankruptcy process. She saw their struggles, and she saw a variety of ways in which the credit industry manipulates things in order to get them ever deeper into debt.
The end result of the research was unprecedented, essentially the first independent, data-driven analysis on bankruptcy in the country. It resulted in two books and drove almost everything Warren has done since. She became known as a bankruptcy expert. She worked as a legal consultant for some big corporations like Dow Chemical and for consumers in a major class-action lawsuit against Sears. Recently, Warren's campaign disclosed that she made nearly $2 million through her corporate legal work. Then, in the 1990s, Warren also joined the National Bankruptcy Review Commission.
Liz is the kind of person that when she sees somebody doing something that she thinks really is going to screw things up, she's not going to be quiet about it.
So, Westbrook says, Warren started speaking up loudly in political circles about financial issues.
It's just that none of it was in the context of being partisan until it was.
Warren's work on the Bankruptcy Commission made it clear. Republicans in Congress were not her ally. Old colleagues insist all these years of studying bankruptcy changed Warren. It's why they believe she eventually registered as a Democrat in 1996. The thing is, this bankruptcy research did not just affect Warren. It left a deep impression on how people who collaborated with Warren see her. People like Catherine Nicholson, who worked as her research assistant for 3 years.
I've known Elizabeth Warren forever. She cares about families and their struggles. So come next year, it'll be a hard choice for me in the ballot box.
It'll be a hard choice because Nicholson, who now lives near Omaha, Nebraska, describes herself as a conservative Catholic, a Paul Ryan sort of Republican. She voted for Donald Trump in 2016.
However, I believe in Elizabeth Warren, too.
In the time since Nicholson met her, Warren has evolved from being described as an economic conservative to arguably one of the fiercest liberal consumer advocates in the country. Some of Warren's progressive critics say this evolution makes her inauthentic. Some who've known her argue it's why voters should believe her. Asma Khalid, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from WBUR and from Jones Day, an integrated partnership collaboratively providing legal services for more than a century. 43 offices, 5 continents, serving clients as one firm worldwide. Learn more at jonesday.com. Drexel University, recognizing 100 years of a cooperative education program that prepares students to address the challenges of a changing world. More at drexel.edu/ambitioncan'twait. And Subaru, with their Subaru Share the Love event, now through January 2nd. Details on the not-for-profit organizations that it supports are at Subaru.com/share. Love, it's what makes Subaru, Subaru.
This is 90.9 WBUR. Bob Oakes here with Robin Young. Hi, Robin.
Well, hi.
And hello to Jay Clayton, too. Hi, Jay.
Hey, Bob.
Here's what we need you to know on the other end of the radio, that the WBUR year-end fundraiser is chugging along, rapidly coming to its conclusion. But we have to, on this day, suspend fundraising for at least a while in about a half hour at 9 o'clock this morning so that we can bring you live coverage as House Democrats unveil their 2 articles of impeachment. And what that means is, the rest of this half hour, the next half hour here on WBUR, is really important because since we have to suspend the fundraiser, we need to make sure that we hit this hour's goal. We're just trying to raise the money it takes to bring you the news in 2020. And between now and 9 o'clock, we need to raise another $11,000. So ask yourself what WBUR is worth to you, what we have been worth to you in 2019, and what we're going to be worth, how important we're going to be to you in 2020 as everything that's on the table continues to move forward politically. The number to call is 1-800-909-9287. Call that number with your gift of any amount or give it online at WBUR.org.
1-800-909-9287, WBUR.org. As Bob said, the press conference coming up in, you know, just a few minutes at 9 o'clock, where the House Democrats expected to announce these 2 articles of impeachment, abuse of power, obstruction of justice. And then the Judiciary Committee, we here will be voting on Thursday. That's probably going to be all day Thursday, debate and vote on those 2 articles expected to pass. And that Democrat-led committee expected to go to the full House, which will then debate the articles of impeachment and vote on them. Maybe some delay with Republicans asking for different points along the way. But that's probably going to take a couple days next week. The full House votes on the articles of impeachment, expected to pass there in the Democrat-led House. Then it goes to the Senate. And this could be, you know, the president becoming the 3rd president to be impeached, but this would be maybe one of the first Senate trials. You know, Bill Clinton, I think, was the only other Senate trial in modern political history that lasted about a month in the Senate. And if you were there and you remember, it was all day, every day. Mm-hmm. So what we need from you now is to connect with you right now, because we're going to have a lot of things between us over the next several weeks. So 1-800-909-9287, WBUR.org. You know what that saying is, Jay? You never call, you never write. Now's the time to call and write. 1-800-909-9287. Let us know you're out there.
Yeah, it really does matter, because about half of the funding for all this stuff you're getting from WBUR and will continue to count on into next year is paid for with contributions from our listeners. That's why yours is so important. Whatever the amount is up to you. It's good with us, but we hope you will see that it really does make a difference whether or not you give. So please give right now at WBUR.org or call 1-800-909-9287. We've got a couple of nice thank you gifts for you that you can choose from. A pair of WBUR socks, very stylish and very cool. You may want those for yourself or for a holiday gift. Or a day of skiing any day, including weekends and holidays at Sunday River. They've already got about 60 trails open. They're making snow up there round the clock, so you'll have lots of fun in the snow, as our thanks and theirs for your $120 contribution. We'll use all that money to bring you the news because Sunday River donated these tickets. But here's the most important thing to know, especially if you want one or a couple or a few of them. We've only got 159 lift tickets left.
They've gone.
Yep, they're going quickly, as I said they would. And so before you miss out, because there are tens of thousands of people listening right now, and the phones are busy, the website is busy, go to the phone or the web if you want to get one of those lift tickets as our thanks so you don't miss out. They're going to be gone pretty quickly. 800-909-9287 and WBUR.org.
You know, we're going to be close to record high today, 60 degrees in the Boston area, but up in Maine at Sunday River, they have, as Jason said, about 60 trails open. They have almost 300 acres of open skiing. They've got a half dozen lifts going, including a couple of quads, a couple of expresses, and the chandala, which is the high-speed chairlift combination gondola. So
I thought it was chandala.
It's in this season it might be.
So they didn't go with gear lift, huh?
In this season of giving, how about taking one of those tickets for yourself or a bunch of them to give away? Give us $120 for a lift ticket to Sunday River, and you know they're almost that anyway.
Yeah.
So how about pledging to support the news now? Take a ski lift ticket, buy a pair of socks, or give us a gift in any amount at 1-800-909-9287 or give at WBUR.org. The phones are ringing. We're down to $10,000 to go by 9 o'clock when we stop fundraising for the very important news conference on the articles of impeachment. In a half hour, we need to raise that money, which means we need to hear from you if we're going to get there successfully.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Plymouth Rock Assurance, providing Massachusetts and New Hampshire drivers with customized auto insurance coverage and advice from a local agent. More at PlymouthRock.com.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. Articles of impeachment against President Trump are expected to be announced next hour on Capitol Hill. House Democrats are holding a news conference. On Twitter this morning, the president says impeaching him would be wrong and sheer political madness. Congressional negotiators have agreed on a defense bill that includes 12 weeks of paid family leave for all civilian employees of the federal government. Here's NPR's Giles Snyder.
The family leave provision for the federal workforce represents a victory for Democrats. It was included in the final legislation alongside President Trump's desire to create a space force. Under the bill, the space force would be housed under the Air Force. Leaders of the House and Senate Armed Services Committees announced the compromise legislation that also includes a 3.1% pay raise for the troops.
A new law in Afghanistan seeks to protect the rights of children. As Jennifer Glass reports from Kabul, it's a first in that country.
The new law on child protection makes anyone under the age of 18 a child. A radical shift here where girls are routinely married off much younger than that, and child labor is common. The president passed the law in May. It took months for Parliament to ratify it because of staunch opposition, and implementation will likely be difficult.
The Trump administration is negotiating with the Taliban to end the 18-year war in Afghanistan. Talks were held over the weekend in Qatar. This is NPR News.
This is 90.9 WBUR. Good morning. I'm Bob Oakes in Boston. Congresswoman Catherine Clark is providing details on the articles of impeachment that House Democrats have drafted against President Trump. House leaders are scheduled to unveil the articles at 9 a.m. Speaking on CNN just a short time ago, Clark said one article against the president will focus on abuse of power, the second on obstruction of Congress. Excuse me. Clark says that President Trump represents a threat to the democratic process and that, in her words, he must leave office.
He has endangered our national security and he has threatened and presents a clear and present danger to our elections in 2020.
We'll have live coverage of the unveiling of the articles of impeachment at 9 a.m. this morning. Pete Frates, the Beverly man who helped popularize the Ice Bucket Challenge and raised millions of dollars for ALS research, has died from the disease. He was 34. WBUR's Kellen Borchers reports Frady's fight helped others find strength.
Steve Kowalski took the ice bucket challenge when it was a viral sensation in 2014. Then he got his own ALS diagnosis 3 years later. One of the first things he did was attend a Pete Frady's Day celebration in Boston.
No one even in my family knew at that point, just myself and my neurologist. So Pete's wife and his mom, Nancy, both spoke and drew me in. And I will never forget how that was the beginning of the fog lifting for me, because they taught me to fight.
Kowalski has since become a fundraiser for ALS research, just like Frady's. Frady's funeral is Friday in Chestnut Hill. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Callum Borchers.
Some former faculty members of Marlborough College in Vermont are working to keep the school open following word it will close this coming spring and move its programs to Emerson College in Boston. College officials blame declining enrollment and increasing debt for the decision to close Marlborough, but the faculty group says the school still has a large endowment it can use to stay open. Sports, the Bruins dropped their third straight game, a 5-2 loss to the Senators last night in Ottawa. The Bruins visit the Washington Caps tomorrow. Celtics beat the Cleveland Cavaliers 110-88 last night at the Garden. Celts visit the Indiana Pacers tomorrow. Forecast, cloudy, breezy, mild today. We'll have showers and rain with highs around 60 degrees. Tonight, it changes over to freezing rain, sleet, and snow as lows drop to about 30. By the time the snow ends tomorrow morning, we'll have 1 to 4 inches on the ground. It'll be in the low 30s tomorrow. Sunny near 30 on Thursday. Mostly sunny Friday and in the upper 30s. In Boston now, 57 degrees. 51 in Worcester, 52 in Lowell, and 56 degrees in Plymouth at 8:35.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Lake Champlain Chocolates. Handcrafting chocolate gifts to celebrate the season at local specialty food stores and at lakechamplainchocolates.com. Little Passports, their new Science Junior subscription for kids, aims to inspire curiosity, designed to bring projects to life while utilizing new science concepts. More at littlepassports.com. And Capital One, offering a variety of credit card options with features for a range of customers. From foodies to travelers, Capital One, what's in your wallet? Credit approval required. Capital One Bank, USA, N.A.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Rachel Martin.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. We have news this morning of a lawsuit in California, a lawsuit that will be of interest to anybody who ever took the SAT or ACT, you know, those tests that you take that can be a factor in college admissions. NPR has obtained a draft of the complaint in this suit to be filed today. It points to research that shows the tests are biased against low-income and non-white students, and the lawsuit demands that the University of California system stop using the tests in admissions. NPR's Alyssa Nadworny covers higher education and is still sitting in her chair even though I mangled her name. Good morning.
Hey, Steve.
What are the details of this lawsuit?
So the lawsuit's being filed by the pro bono law firm Public Counsel on behalf of students and a number of advocacy organizations. The complaint draws heavily on research that the test scores are more strongly connected to your family income than how well you'll do in college.
Mm-hmm.
It claims that by requiring these tests, the admissions process is basically legally discriminating against applicants on the basis of race and wealth. And therefore, it's not treating all students equally under the California Constitution.
Okay, so that's what the complaint is. And yep. We've heard those kinds of things about standardized tests before, and colleges keep using them. Could this suit really force the University of California system, which is huge,
yep,
to get rid of them?
So what's interesting about University of California system, it was one of the first schools to adopt the SAT almost 50 years ago.
Hmm.
And back then, the companies behind the SAT lobbied them pretty hard to make this a reality. When they did adopt the test, it kind of set a national precedent. So it's potentially that if they drop it again,
Could be a national precedent again.
Could do the same thing, yeah. I mean, the university even back then was debating whether or not they should use this. Just last year, the president of the UC system ordered a faculty task force to study the use of standardized tests. They say they're waiting for that task force to decide what to do.
I guess if they do abandon the tests, they wouldn't be the first, right? Because some colleges that haven't been sued have just gotten rid of considering the
Absolutely.
Tests and admissions.
Yeah, so the test optional movement has been gaining steam. Just in 2019 alone, there were more than 50 schools that dropped the ACT from requirements and admissions. The UC system, as you said, is huge, you know, multiple campuses, more than 250,000 students. So that would be a really big deal.
You know, I'm just thinking through what the value of these tests are. I mean, we've just heard about the disadvantages. And entirely aside from things like race and income, it's just like your anxiety level. People test in different ways. But the argument for the test was here is a standardized, yep, fair way to evaluate students who came from different high schools, different levels of education. What do colleges do when they get rid of the SAT?
Well, that's the big question. I mean, grades have shown to be correlated with how well you can do in college, but grades are subject to inflation. I mean, here's the issue with the college admissions process is the whole thing is, you know, rife with inequities. So, and this stems from K through 12. So we know that non-white schools are more likely to be underfunded. They're more likely to have less access to advanced courses like APs. So this whole system is really set up to kind of give more power to the wealthy students.
Is there anybody other than the people who make the SAT or the ACT who is saying, oh, I love this test. We've got to save, we've got to preserve the history of the test?
You know, surprisingly, there are some access organizations that say rather than eliminate the test because the test has so much power, we should really be giving students prep material. We should be helping them study for this test, which is kind of an interesting take on this whole debate.
Okay, Alyssa, thanks for your reporting, and we'll continue paying attention as that lawsuit goes forward.
Thanks, Steve.
NPR's Alyssa Nadworny. And this is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Rachel Martin. I'm WBUR immigration reporter Shannon Dooling, asking you to give WBUR to yourself and your community. Go to WBUR.org.
Dial the number right now or go to the website and pledge at WBUR.org, as Shannon says, or give at 1-800-909-9287. Here's why. Because it's 8:40 in the morning, because in 20 minutes we suspend fundraising for at least a little bit of time this morning as we bring you live coverage of the Democrats' unveiling of the two articles of impeachment, or the expectation that there will be two articles of impeachment that they do detail in a news conference at 9 o'clock this morning. NPR will have live coverage. We'll bring it to you. So that means we have to raise, we have to make sure that we hit this hour's goal of raising $15,000 during the 8 o'clock hour, because we won't have much time in the 9 o'clock hour to raise funds for WBUR, money that will pay for the news in 2020. All the political coverage, all the non-political coverage of all the news stories nationally, internationally, and locally, we're asking you to help out right now, because we still have 9,000 to go of the 15,000 in the next 20 minutes. How much of that can you do? Is the news worth a $50 gift, a $100 pledge, a $200 pledge, or a thousand or two? How about making it now to help us get there? Help us reach this hour's goal by making your gift at WBUR.org or at 1-800-909-9287.
The way WBUR works, the way WBUR was built to work and has worked very well for more than 50 years now, is with listener contributions. They account for about half of all the funding here at WBUR that brings you Morning Edition, that brings you the BBC, that brings you special coverage. For example, 9 o'clock in less than 20 minutes now, we've got more of that coming up, the latest in the impeachment inquiry. We are able to do all this for you. You're able to turn WBUR on and hear it anytime you want to, because listeners have given to WBUR in earlier fund drives. This is our last fund drive for the year, so we're asking you, especially if you haven't given yet this year, to think about what WBUR is worth to you. Think about all the times you come back to us, the reasons that you choose WBUR over other sources, and then give what you can to keep WBUR as strong and independent as it is. We've got some WBUR socks, very stylish. We've got Sunday River ski tickets, a lift ticket for a day of skiing, including weekends and holidays. You can get either one of these gifts as our thanks for your $120 that will go right to work to bring you the news. All you need to do is take 2 minutes and give that, or give any amount that you can, at WBUR.org. Or 1-800-909-9287.
1-800-909-9287, WBUR.org. Okay, the number?
that we're looking at right now has come down to 8,000.
Okay.
So fantastic. I mean, you guys are calling. We appreciate it so much. Thank you. Thank you. But hey, those of you who haven't, hello.
That's you.
We're looking at you. 1-800-909-9287-WBUR.org. Please help us make this up by
16
minutes. 1-800-909-9287 or 1-800-90.9-WBUR and WBUR.org. And let's get this nut down
16
by
minutes
16
ago.
Minutes from now. Yeah. And by the way, we know that we're getting the articles of impeachment at a news conference in 15 minutes. There's still some speculation that even though we're hearing there may be two articles, you know, there's been a huge debate within the Democratic leaders in the House whether or not to have a third, which would involve obstruction of justice charges from the Mueller report. Mm-hmm. So there is some suspense there. We're waiting with bated breath. Whatever that is.
Doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't. 1-800-909-9287-WBUR.org.
I think it has to do with worms and a bobber.
Oh,
yeah. I was going to say the fly fisherman in the room will know.
It's getting worse.
That's disgusting.
Okay, here we are. It's 8:44 in the morning, only 15 minutes left before we interrupt fundraising, interrupt regular news coverage to bring you live coverage of the news conference where the House Democrats will unveil their articles of impeachment. We're asking you right now to consider making this the moment you give WBUR and comprehensive, thorough, thoughtful journalism to yourself and the community by giving us the gift of any amount that helps pay for the news. We have $8,000 to raise in 15 minutes, and we need your help if we're going to succeed in doing that. The number to call as we go back to the news now is 1-800-909-9287, or, of course, give online, especially if you're listening there, give at WBUR.org.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Sunovion, with a vision for a healthier world, advanced through innovation that helps people living with serious medical conditions. Take on tomorrow. More at Sunovion.com.
Now in Bostonomics, business shares in the Burlington-based biopharma company, Arcule, are up more than 100% on news it's being acquired by the drug giant Merck for $2.7 billion cash. Arcule has been developing cancer treatments for over two decades, but has yet to bring one to market. This is WBUR. It's 8:47.
Funding for WBUR's business report comes from First Republic. First Republic's dedicated team invests time with their business banking clients in order to provide customized solutions, financial advice, and personalized service. Learn more at firstrepublic.com. First Republic, it's a privilege to serve you. Member
FDIC. This is WBUR. I'm Bob Oakes. The MBTA needs to do much more to improve safety throughout its system. That, according to a scathing report from an independent panel following a five-month investigation into the agency. The probe was prompted by a series of derailments and other mishaps on the T. WBUR's Steve Brown has more on the report.
In addressing the T's Fiscal and Management Control Board report, co-author, former U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood, tried to soften the blow of its findings.
The T is safe, and it bears repeating, the T is safe, but the T could be safer.
LaHood, along with a pair of other out-of-state transit experts, were hired in June after a red line derailment knocked out critical signaling equipment, causing severe delays which wound up lasting all summer. The panel's report concluded the T's approach to safety is questionable, which results in safety culture concerns. It went on to say in almost every area examined, deficiencies in policy, application of safety standards or industry best practices, and accountability were apparent. The panel offered up 34 recommendations to improve safety. MBTA General Manager Steve Poftak says the report is helping them understand they need to do a better job on required preventative maintenance.
We are also in the process of ensuring that we have enough resources in place to not only do preventive maintenance, but all the other work that the system demands. We have already initiated an aggressive hiring campaign. We plan to add 200 positions in engineering and maintenance. We've already added 70, and that work will be ongoing.
Governor Baker said the administration plans to file legislation that will allow them to speed up hiring at the T. As the report indicated, more employees are needed to ensure the system's safety. The governor urged the legislature to pass a supplemental budget that contains $50 million that would go toward T operations. He wouldn't say if the T needs increased revenues from the state.
Well, the T gets additional revenue every year from the legislature through the increase that comes with the increase in the sales tax, which is its primary source of funding. We'll spend a bunch of time talking to the T about this and about these recommendations, and if we think they need additional resources, we'll factor it in.
For some stakeholders, the report does not come as a surprise. President-elect of the MBTA Carmen's Union, Jim Evers, issued a statement saying the union has raised concerns related to MBTA safety for years, both publicly and behind closed doors, about insufficient staffing, deficiencies in leadership, and prioritizing cost savings at the expense of safety. He added the union's concerns have consistently been ignored by MBTA management. After the release of the safety report, administration and T officials are vowing to be more mindful of the system's safety needs. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Steve Brown.
A new memoir by a local author explores parenthood in a changing America. The book, titled Once More to the Rodeo, tells the story of Boston-based author Calvin Hennick's road trip with his young son to his childhood home in Iowa. Along the way, Hennick tackles tough questions about what it means to be a man and a father in today's world, as well as the challenges of raising a black son in America. Calvin Hennick joins us now to talk about it. Thanks very much for coming into the studio. Good to meet you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Bob.
So the story focuses largely on the 10-day road trip you took 2 years ago with your son, Niall, who was then 5 years old. You were headed to an annual rodeo in your hometown of Maxwell, Iowa, which explains the book's title. How did the road trip become the background for the book?
So my son was 5 years old, and he was about to enter kindergarten, which felt sort of bizarrely big and looming over my mind, like the protective bubble that I had placed him in was just starting to begin to pop. And it sort of hit me that, you know, I'm the person most responsible for helping him to become the man that he's going to be when he's an adult. And I sort of realized that I didn't have a lot in the way of answers in terms of what that meant, even for myself. So I thought that this would make a good kind of bucket to put these ideas inside of.
Get into this a little deeper. Why was returning to your hometown so important to you?
It was important to me because I think I had a lot of sort of unresolved family stuff with my own father that I needed to kind of think about and work through, and Iowa seemed like the right place to do that. But also, again, I thought there was this compelling contrast between my son's upbringing, where he would never end up at a rodeo in the suburbs outside of Boston, and just sort of, in a way, it's a homecoming for me and a fish out of water story for him.
You speak openly in the book about the struggles of not only raising a son who's biracial, but also of you, a white man, and what you can teach him about growing up black in America.
Sure. I feel sort of underqualified to be my son's father, in that he's going to face situations or challenges that I never did as a kid. And so there's a story I relate in the book about a 2017 incident at Fenway Park where we were getting in for the baseball game. It was my son's first Red Sox game. And the fan next to me, after a young black woman sang the national anthem, he used the N-word, used a racial slur to describe her singing. And, you know, I was horrified. And at first I was kind of like, well, doesn't he see my biracial son and my black father-in-law here sitting with me? And then I kind of thought, man, well, maybe that's the point. Maybe, you know, it was a way for him to sort of use the N-word against this little boy and get away with it.
So what was it like to watch your son process that event?
He processed it a bunch of different ways really quickly. Like, immediately he sort of very sweetly was worried about the man who had said the slur and was worried about him not being able to come back to the baseball park and worried about, you know, him being sad. But then he kind of got scared. He worried about the man showing up at our house. He worried about going out to other big public events. He'll still sometimes express worry about going to a large public event because what if somebody like that man is there? Mm. And so, you know, then sort of like the saddest point, I had talked to my son on the road trip about racism and segregation. And so after the event at Fenway, my son said, Daddy, I thought that was over, white people and black people not getting along. And it, you know, sort of caught my heart in my throat. And, you know, I had to explain to him that, no, that's not over.
Well, to that point, in 2014, you wrote a piece for Ebony Magazine, and you wrote about your fears for your son's future. Let me read a graph here and get you to comment on it. If he does darken, women will cross the street when they see him coming. the way they sometimes do when they pass my wife's brother on the sidewalk. Convenience store employees will follow him suspiciously around the aisles. Cops may hassle him for things I don't think twice about, like jaywalking. Your son is now 8. This was a 2014 article. Are you worrying about that today, or even more worried about that today?
It definitely, you know, is something that pops up with, especially when something hits the news where there's been sort of race-based injustice. I don't think, oh, that could have been me, because in most cases it could not have been me. But I do sometimes think, oh, that could one day be my son, because it could be. And it's not something I obsess about or, you know, belabor over, but it's something that, you know, I want to prepare him to know at some point, you know, how some people are going to perceive him. At the same time, I don't want to give him a complex. I don't want to put a chip on his shoulder. So I think it is this delicate balance, and my wife and I, you know, talk about it a lot.
And looking outward, if I might, what do you want people to take away from your book?
The book doesn't lend itself up to easy answers. You know, it's not, here's the secret of parenting, or, you know, to be a good father, do X, Y, Z. But I kind of would like, if people read it, and to just build in those moments where you do take a step back, and, you know, parenthood can easily become about diapers and school drop-offs and soccer practice and homework and emails to school. But those are just the details. Those aren't really the meat of what we're trying to do here. So I'd love it if people read the book and sort of took a pause and found some time with their own kids to sort of ask the big questions about, hey, what am I trying to do here?
Calvin Hennick, author of the new book, Once More to the Rodeo. Thanks a lot for joining us. It was great to meet you. And good luck over the next 10 years till your son gets to be 18.
Thanks so much, Bob.
The book, Once More to the Rodeo, comes out today. There's a launch party tonight at Brookline Booksmith at 7 p.m.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Curriculum Associates, the EdTech innovators behind iReady, designed to empower teachers and drive gains for 8 million students nationwide. CurriculumAssociates.com.
This is 90.9 WBUR. Looking at the clock, it's 8:55 in the morning, 5 minutes away from shutting off fundraising for at least a little while here on WBUR so that we can bring you live NPR coverage of the House Democrats as they unveil what's expected to be two articles of impeachment against President Trump. The news conference scheduled for 9 a.m. this morning. What this all means for us here at WBUR is that every moment of fundraising is very, very important, because what we're trying to do, and all we're trying to do, is raise just the amount of money it takes to keep WBUR coming to you in 2020. For all the political news you'll get, for all the campaign news you'll get, for all the non-political and non-campaign news that you'll get from WBUR, give a little back right now. Let's hear from you at the pledge line with your gift of a pledge. 1-800-909-9287. Of course, you can always give online at WBUR.org.
1-800-909-9287, about 4 minutes before 9 o'clock. And then that press conference that we've been talking about all morning and everybody will be listening to. And you can listen because you've supported this station, right? Right.
You know, let me interrupt that thought by saying something I didn't say a moment ago, and that is that already this hour we've raised about $10,000, but we wanted to hit 15, so we have 4 minutes left to raise the remaining amount of
that
money.
Listen, I know what you're thinking out there. Never satisfied, are you? But imagine how we feel. 1-800-909-9287, because we love the fact that so many called and $10,000 came in. We love that, but we need 5 more. I mean, that's just the way it is. WBUR.org is where you can go online. You can also take us with you on your listening device all day and listen to any of the news as it comes across. You can listen to this press conference there or right here on your radio. 1-800-909-9287, WBUR.org.
And what are you doing with your money? You're funding the news coverage that you're going to count on in the weeks and the year ahead. You're listening today thanks to people that have given before, but now we hope you will take your turn, because the money that we're raising is only the money that it takes to bring you the news. WBUR is a nonprofit organization. We just seek to make sure we can keep up with the resources that it takes to bring you the news that you want to keep up with. So we hope you'll take a part of that $5,000 or so, maybe $100, maybe a couple hundred, maybe a couple thousand if you can do it. 800-909-9287. And you can give at WBUR.org as well. We've got WBUR socks. We've got lift tickets to go skiing at Sunday River. You can have a pair pair of socks or a day of skiing. Either one is our thanks for your $120 that will help us bring you the news. And the great thing about the skiing is you can go any day, including weekends and holidays. They've already got about 60 trails open up at Sunday River.
Or make it a gift package. Give somebody the skiing and the socks.
Exactly. You could do both. You can get more than one lift ticket if you'd like, $120 gift per ticket to support WBUR. We've only got 147 of these left, though, and there are literally thousands of people listening right now. So before you miss out, don't wait much longer. 800-909-9287, and WBUR.org is where you can get in on that.
Just a minute to go, Robin Young, before we have to break away for live coverage of the House impeachment articles of impeachment unveiling.
1-800-909-9287, WBUR.org. You guys have been fantastic. I mean, you just really come through.
Thank you.
Don't drop, you know, you're like a few feet from the finish line here. So don't drop out. 1-800-909-9287, WBUR.org.
Give right now for free, independent, thoughtful, thorough journalism. Give to WBUR right now as we break away for a little while for this important news conference. The phone number to pledge at is 1-800-909-9287, or take 2 minutes and give now at WBUR.org. And thanks.
You're listening to 90.9 WBUR FM Boston,
92.7 WBUA Tisbury,
89.1 WBUH Brewster,
streaming at WBUR.org,
and live at City Space, Boston's new home for public conversation.
WBUR, Boston's NPR news station.